chapter 9, please. Joshua chapter 9, as we go through this book together. Joshua chapter 9. We have seen where God has commanded the purging of the Canaanites out of his land. And the children of Israel have done so to Jericho, to Ai, and to Bethel. Tremendous victories amidst some failure, but now faithful again to the Lord. And then you come to chapter 9 and we have an unexpected circumstance. Let's read verses 1 through 9 of Joshua chapter 9. And it came to pass, when all the kings which were on this side Jordan, in the hills and in the valleys and on all the coasts of the great sea over against Lebanon, the Hittite and the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, notice that word Hivite there, and the Jebusite, when they heard thereof, that they gathered themselves together to fight with Joshua and with Israel with one accord. And when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done unto Jericho and to Ai, they did work willily and went and made as if they had been ambassadors, and took old sacks upon their asses and wine bottles, old and rent and bound up, and old shoes and clouted upon their feet, and old garments upon them, and all the bread of their provision was dry and moldy. And they went to Joshua unto the camp of Gilgal, and said unto him, and to the men of Israel, we be come from a far country. Now therefore make ye a league with us. And the men of Israel said unto thee, would you say that out loud, please? These are the people we read of in verse 1. Some of the Hivites are coming out against them. Here's another group of Hivites who are not joining them and they're being deceitful. So the men of Israel said unto the Hivites, these are the Gibeonites, peradventure ye dwell among us, and how shall we make a league with you? Let's stop there for just a moment. You can sense some doubt in verse 7, can you not? Can you sense that they're saying, no, wait a second, we're not real sure about you. We don't know who you are. They don't know they're Hivites. The writer of Joshua lets us know that, but they at this time do not know that these are Hivites. Because what are they supposed to do to the Hivites? They're supposed to clean them out of the land. They do not know that these are Hivites. There's some doubt here. Have you ever faced a situation where you sensed some doubt, where you wondered if somebody's claim was true? Have you ever bought something where you wondered if the people selling it, if their claim was true? Do you know what that sense of doubt feels like? Somebody you meet who says they are something and they are not. Every time you vote, you probably sense some doubt as to who this person is and the claims that they make. The point is, we all sense doubt about people at times. Alarm bells go off in our minds. We have hesitation of heart. But you just can't place your finger on it. There was a man who once presented himself as one who wanted to help us in this ministry. And I saw some warning signs. I saw the way he treated his wife. I saw the arrogance, the laziness, the hypocrisy, the big talk but little walk. The fact that he was undependable. But I gave him the benefit of my doubts and regretted it. Folks, we deal with the doubtful all the time. You can look at a restaurant menu and you can doubt about what you're ordering. You go, well, I'll just go ahead and give them the benefit of my doubt. That's not real serious. But the doubt that they're experiencing here, this is serious. And it's the same kind of doubts that we face in our lives, folks, as believers. If you are a Bible-believing Christian, you will face times when you will come up with somebody, some movement, some organization, some institution, some man, some woman, and you're going, I'm not sure there should be any association here. I'm talking about religiously. I'm talking about ecclesiastically, where I join hands with this person. Some time ago, I got a call from a guy in Denver who was wanting to get a bunch of pastors together for a political demonstration. This was a year ago, that would take place in September. He even came to my office and met with me and said, "This is what I would like to do, but I'd like to get all the pastors in Colorado together. I'd like to get you all on board." I said, "Let me ask you some questions. Is this political or is this religious?" He said, "No, it's only political." I said, "If it's only political, I'd be glad to get involved. But as soon as this turns into anything religious, I'm out. Because I want to have no association with men who deny the virgin birth of Christ, deny the inspiration of the Bible, and deny so many other cardinal doctrines in the Word of God. I will have nothing to do with it." That was a year ago. The Friday before this rally was to take place on the Capitol steps, I still hadn't heard who was going to be there, so he sent an email out reminding us, a number of pastors. And it was still vague. And I sent him an email back and I said, "No, wait a second, who's going to be there and what's going to happen?" Then he sent me the agenda. I emailed him back and I said, "Listen, I told you that if this happened, I would have nothing to do with it. Take my name off your list. I want nothing to do with this." He was going to have a Muslim speak on religious freedom. He was going to have a Roman Catholic get up there and speak on abortion, which that's fine. But when you point out who's coming on here, I said, "I want to have nothing. This is ecumenical. I want nothing to do with this." I sensed my doubt when the man came to see me, but I gave him the benefit of my doubt. But I said, "If anything changes, I'm out." My point is, we deal with the doubtful all the time. There's a verse, I'd like you to turn to it, 1 Corinthians 15:33, that expresses well what I want you to see this morning from Joshua chapter 9. Paul says this in 1 Corinthians 15:33, "Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners." You may have notes in your Bible because this is the old Elizabethan English and it really does not communicate to us what I really want you to see and what this is saying. This literally says, "Be not deceived. Bad company or bad associations are ruining reputable character." Bad associations are corrupting good character. In this day, folks, of diversity and toleration, Christians are wrongly unconcerned because who you closely associate with is important. Because who you associate with will impact your possessing what God has for you as a believer. Because who you choose to associate with, I'm talking about friends and even some family members. I'm not saying you shouldn't associate with family members, but there's certain things I can't do with a family member. I can't think of it, but there are some family members, distant relatives, I would never have come up here and lead in prayer. I wouldn't let them do it. Because by so doing, I am endorsing them. I am presenting them to you as a church and saying, I can endorse this person. They're my relative. I can have Thanksgiving with them and so forth. But I couldn't have him stand behind his platform. Perhaps preach. Foolish affiliations are responsible for emasculating many one-time strong ministries. There's three things in this passage that reminds us that if we heed these things, it will prevent us from making foolish associations. Now, every one of you need this. Because every one of us have the potential to make some kind of a foolish association with somebody, to join hands with somebody. The subpoints of these three points come from another verse that begins with the phrase, "Be not deceived." Galatians 6:7, "Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. You're going to see that verse in these 3 points I'm going to give you today. So 3 things this passage reminds us that if we take heed to them will prevent us from making foolish associations. First of all, I want you to see in verses 1 to 13 the deceitfulness of the enemy. And I want you to remember this. I am easily deceived. Put your name in there. I am easily deceived. Every one of you is easily deceived. Now, some more than others. In 2008, a whole bunch of idiots voted. They were deceived. They should have known better. Most of you knew better. Some, perhaps not. I am easily deceived. I use the political realm as an illustration. But I'm talking about religiously now too. I am easily deceived. And Galatians 6:7 says, be not deceived. And 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, be not deceived. Why does there have to be a command? Don't be deceived. Because I have the propensity to be deceived. Therefore, I need to be told. Now, don't be deceived. Bad company will ruin reputable character. How am I deceived? Well, let's look at the children of Israel here in this passage. Number one, they were deceived through subtlety. They were deceived through subtlety. That's found in verses 1 through 5. First of all, I want you to see that God's people can defeat Satan, the roaring lion. You'll see that in verses 1 and 2. Is the enemy clearly delineated in verses 1 and 2? Do you know who the enemy is in verses 1 and 2? You say, well, yes, I do, because you've got the Hittite, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, the Jebusite. And in verse 2 it says, they gathered themselves together to fight with us. Now, isn't it easy to see when the enemy comes out against you? They come out and they're ready to fight. And I go, that's the enemy. That's a Hivite. That's a Perizzite. That's a Canaanite. That's a Hittite. He is my enemy. He's coming out to fight me. Folks, that's sometimes how we can see Satan, the roaring lion. Because he's a roaring lion. I mean, if you're out there in the field and you see a lion, you go, that's something I got to get away from. So God's people sometimes are able to defeat Satan, the roaring lion, because he's sometimes easily identified. Be sober, be vigilant, for your adversary as a roaring lion. The devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour. There are times when it's easy to identify somebody who is off doctrinally. You can say, I totally disagree with that guy. He's an enemy of the gospel. I can have nothing to do with that man. I can have nothing to do with a believer who is flagrantly disobedient. And I can easily identify somebody like that sometimes. Well, that's when I'm able to defeat Satan, the roaring lion. But Satan is also called something else in the Bible. Something that creeps along the ground that you can't see. I hate snakes. I hate them. Jesse goes out in the field and picks them up and, you know, comes up and shows them to me. And I'm, get the thing away from me. I don't want to see that crazy thing. I hate snakes. And one of the reasons I hate them is because snakes are very subtle. They're creepy. And God's people are easily deceived by Satan, the serpent. Because the enemy is easily camouflaged. Now, the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And yes, Eve was deceived. We read in Revelation 12:9 that the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. Satan easily deceives the whole world because he comes as a serpent. That's the guy who comes and he comes along and says, hey, I'm a fundamentalist like you. I'm here to help you. I'm here to support you. And you go, oh, great. And sometimes we accept an ungodly lifestyle because, well, this guy calls himself a Christian. By the way, that's all it takes today is for somebody to call themselves a Christian. And most Christians go, oh, he's a believer because he says he is. A Christian school with low standards is more deceptive than a public school. Because they call themselves Christian. I would rather that a young person go to a secular public school than to a so-called Christian school that has the same low standards as the public school. There's more damage being done to this country by traitors from within than enemies that we can clearly see over there. Why is it that our military men, when they're sworn into the armed forces, say this: I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and... We never think about the domestic part, do we? We've got a lot of domestic enemies. Men in high office. Why? I'm an American. I'm patriotic. And this is what you'll find even in churches and institutions. I'm a Christian. I'm a fundamentalist. There's the young fundamentalists today who their whole intent is not to start their own churches, but to get into established churches and then to take over those churches. I've seen it in what I call their manifesto, where the guy who wrote the manifesto says, guys, don't leave the churches, stay there. And he doesn't put it this way, but this is the idea, and take over eventually. And so here's what happens. A church needs a pastor, and the pastor comes in. This guy comes in, a candidate, and he sways and woos people, and he's got a good personality, and you know what? His message is soothing and his message is good, and he's got all kinds of great illustrations that make you laugh and you feel good and you say, this guy's a good preacher. And we're deceived through the subtlety of the enemy. I am easily deceived. Because I'm deceived through subtlety. But secondly, I am easily deceived through ambiguity. Look at verses 6 to 8. I read verses 6 and 7. Verse 8, and they said unto Joshua, we are thy servants. This is an answer to Joshua's questions. We be thy servants. And Joshua said unto them, who are ye? And from whence come ye? Beware of people who don't give straight answers, who are vague. Look at Joshua's question there in verse 8. Who are ye? Where do these people ever say who they really are? They don't give a direct answer. They don't say, well, we're Gibeonites. They don't say, we're Hivites. They're ambiguous. And that's how we're deceived. Because in order to give somebody the benefit of the doubt, we don't ask any more pressing questions because I might offend him. You know, the devil wants to deceive you. He's not going to say, when you ask him, who are you? He's not going to say, I'm the devil, I'm Satan. What's he going to say? Well, I'm a preacher. I'm a gospel singer. I'm an evangelist. I'm a fundamentalist too. Where do you come from? What do you believe? Well, I'm just like you. Warning. There's some vagueness there. Have you ever watched any conservatives try to interview a Muslim on TV and ask them pressing questions like, do you support Hamas? Well, let me ask you this, the guy answers back. Or let me say this, and they never give a straight answer. Has anybody seen that? You can watch this when they interview. They never give a straight answer. Why? Because they're trying to deceive you. Do you support the Muslim Brotherhood? Well, you should be asking such a... And they try to get you off. No, answer my question, yes or no. Do you support the Muslim Brotherhood? Do you support Hezbollah? Do you support Hamas? Do you support what ISIS is doing? Do you support Al-Qaeda? Do you? Never get a straight answer. Paul warned the church at Corinth, for such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as the ministers of righteousness. Satan himself can appear to be one of us. Who are you? No straight answer. What's the other question Joshua asks there in verse 8? And from whence come ye? Do you find a straight answer? No, here's the answer. We be come from a far country. Well, that's straight, isn't it? No. There's no city named. There's no distance given. You know, we're commanded by 1 John 4:1, beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. Sometimes Christians are the most gullible people because we want to give people the benefit of the doubt. But folks, if there's doubt, we've got to press. Note that that verse in 1 John says, beloved, believe not. So, I am easily deceived through subtlety. I am easily deceived through ambiguity. Thirdly, I am easily deceived through flattery. Look at verses 9 and 10. And they said unto him, from a very far country thy servants have come, because, listen to this flattery now, because of the name of the Lord thy God. For we have heard the fame of him and all that he did in Egypt and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond Jordan, to Sihon, king of Heshbon, and to Og, king of Bashan, which was at Ashtaroth. Oh, we have heard about you, folks. We have heard how God has really protected you, and we have heard about you people. You know? And as they're talking, you're just kind of, you know, fluffing up your lapels and going, wow. They have heard about us. And the flattery seems sincere. And the distance these people traveled appealed to Israel's pride. Can you imagine these people coming all this way because they've heard about how God has blessed us? I am easily deceived through flattery. Many people are fooled by flattery, especially if it seems sincere. Think about a young lady who's beginning to date, and some guy comes up to her and says, you know what? You're beautiful. I like this guy. Flattery. But the girl tells this guy, you know, you're good for me. And the guy's like, yep. Keep stroking my ego. That's what I like. Flattery, folks, is bribery. Because flattery is saying something about somebody they like to hear that's not necessarily true. Just so I can get something out of it. You go to the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, and there's people constantly coming to them and saying, hey, we're with you. We support you. We want to help you. Flattery is bribery, and they pay reverence to Israel's religion in verses 9 and 10. We saw this verse in Exodus chapter 23 some time ago. And thou shalt take no gift, for the gift blindeth the wise and perverteth the words of the righteous. Don't take any gifts. So I am easily deceived through flattery. Lastly, and maybe most importantly, I am easily deceived through my emotions. Follow with me as I read verses 11, 12, and 13. Wherefore our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spake to us, saying, take victuals with you for the journey, and go to meet them and say unto them, we are your servants. By the way, there's a little bit more flattery right there. Therefore now make ye a league with us, or a covenant. This our bread we took hot for our provision out of our houses on the day we came forth to go unto you. But now behold, it is dry and it is moldy. And these wine bottles, or these bottles of wine which we filled, were new, and behold, they be rent. And these our garments and our shoes are become old by reason of the very long journey. I am easily deceived through my senses or my emotions. They heard the amazing story. That's one of my senses. I heard this amazing story. I see the aged belongings. I see their aged clothing, and I see these old shoes upon their feet. Well, there's evidence. I taste the moldy bread. Or maybe I don't taste it, but I see it. But there's another sense. And you know what? I feel for you. That's what gets us. I feel for somebody. They had these felt needs. I felt their needs. This is where the emotions get involved. This is where most people get messed up, is with the emotional appeal that somebody has. I'm easily fooled. And look at the first part of verse 14. And the men took of their victuals. They took them. And they basically presented them to themselves and said, well, here's the evidence. These people have to be telling the truth. Never once thinking exactly what we know, having read the story, that they could have just brought some old wine, that they could have just put on some old clothing. Never thinking about that. Because I want to give these people the benefit of the... You've got a doubt. Wow, the enemy is deceitful. So we need to understand, folks, that if I'm going to avoid foolish associations, I've got to remember something. I am easily deceived. And I still am. And so are you. Well, how then am I going to be kept from being deceived easily? That's my second point. And here's the second thing to remember if you're going to avoid foolish associations. And that is the importance of a close walk with God. I have got to walk closely with God. Verses 14 and 15. Notice what they did not do. The men did take of their victuals, but what does the last part of verse 14 say? And they asked not counsel at the mouth of the Lord. They've got all the evidence, but they don't have to ask God. Listen, why do I have to ask God if the evidence is so clear? That's what we would think. Verse 15, and Joshua made peace with them and made a league with them to let them live. And the princes of the congregation swear unto them. Going back to Galatians 6, 7, I said that passage goes along with the outline here. Be not deceived. Well, I am easily deceived. God is not mocked. That literally means there, God is not somebody I can turn my nose up to. God is not somebody I can treat with contempt. Listen, I must walk closely with God. And they asked not counsel at the mouth of the Lord. Why? Because they took of their victuals. That's evidence enough. I don't have to ask God, they would think. You can sense their uneasiness and their suspicions in verse 7. But too often, folks, we are more concerned about offending people rather than offending God. A close walk with God means that my practice is, number one, to pray. To ask counsel of God. We look at this like we all do when we study the Old Testament. We see the children of Israel and we see the stupidity, the stupid mistakes they make. And if you read through your Old Testament a number of times, you almost get frustrated with these people. You almost feel like Moses, where you, today we would say, I want to strangle them. And the frustration builds with these people. But the thing is we're just like them. I read this story and I go, hey, ask God about these people. He'll tell you who they are. Just ask Him. Just pray. Say, Lord, now, should we do this? Please, please. and they ask not counsel at the mouth of the Lord. And you go, oh, it would have been so simple for them just to ask God. And we do the same thing. We do the same thing. The New Testament believer is told, pray without ceasing. That means in every situation and everything, I ask counsel at the mouth of God. So a close walk with God means that I have the practice of praying. Number two, to meditate. Psalm 119:105, thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. They could have known where to go. We know what to do if we simply go to God's word. And it's not just a simple matter of reading it, as I've been pointing out on Wednesday nights. It's a matter of meditation. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. The more I get to know God, the more I get to know people, and the more I get to see this is wrong. In fact, right here in the book of Joshua, how does it start off in Joshua chapter 1 and verse 8? This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Meditate. So the importance of a close walk with God is that I pray, I meditate, thirdly, I wait. And that's something these people did not do. Had they waited three more days, because that's what you're going to read in verse 16, and it came to pass at the end of 3 days after they had made a league with them that they heard that they were their neighbors. If they had waited three more days, they would have never come up with this foolish association, this foolish covenant, this foolish league. But waiting's hard, isn't it? Foolish associations arise from foolish decisions I make when I am pressured to act right now. Hey, if you buy this car today, after today, this deal's no good. If you do this today, and what do we do? Oh, boy, better. Okay. When we're pressured to act instead of waiting. Have you ever thought, salesman, something not right here. If this deal is good, it's good not only today, but it's good tomorrow. It's good next week. How many of you have ever been taken in like that? I have. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Psalm 27:14. Isaiah 40:31. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. They that wait upon the Lord. Pray, meditate, wait, and then trust. Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not unto thine own understanding. Isn't that what they're doing? They're leaning on their own understanding. And lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Trust in God. The importance of a close walk with God will keep us from making foolish associations. Lastly, if I'm going to avoid foolish associations, I need to remember, I'm easily deceived. The deceitfulness of the enemy. The importance of a close walk with God. And thirdly, the consequence of foolish affiliations, the consequence. In other words, I'm going to pay for my wrong decision. Let's go back to Galatians 6:7, which I said supports my point here. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also. And there's the foolish consequence. You're going to reap what you sow. I will pay for my wrong decision. Verse 16, and it came to pass at the end of 3 days after they had made a league with them that they heard that they were their neighbors and that they dwelled among them. And the children of Israel journeyed and came unto their cities on the third day. Now their cities were Gibeon and Chephirah and Beeroth and Kirjath-Jearim. And the children of Israel smote them not. What were they supposed to do? They were supposed to annihilate them. because the princes of the congregation had sworn unto them by the Lord God of Israel, and all the congregation murmured against the princes. But all the princes said unto the congregation, we have sworn unto them by the Lord God of Israel. Now therefore we may not touch them. This we will do to them. We will even let them live, lest wrath be upon us because of the oath which we swear unto them. And the princes said unto them, let them live, but let them be hewers of wood and drawers of water unto all the congregation, as the princes had promised them. And Joshua called for them, and he spake unto them, saying, wherefore have ye beguiled us, saying, we are very far from you when ye dwell among us? Now therefore ye are cursed, and there shall none of you be freed from being bondmen and hewers of wood and drawers of water for the house of my God. And they answered Joshua and said, because it was certainly told thy servants how that the Lord thy God commanded his servant Moses to give you all the land and to destroy all the inhabitants of the land from before you. Therefore we were sore afraid of our lives because of you and have done this thing. And now behold, we are in thine hand as it seemeth good and right unto thee to do unto us, do. And so he did unto them, and delivered them out of the hand of the children of Israel, that they slew them not. And Joshua made them that day hewers of wood and drawers of water for the congregation and for the altar of the Lord, even unto this day, in the place which he should choose. Consequences. Now these people are going to live with us. Now I've got to put up with them. And all the way to the time of King Saul. King Saul did not defend these people. King Saul paid for something that happened because of these Gibeonites. They became thorns in their side and a snare to them, just as God had promised them in the book of Exodus. Because they allowed them to live among them. Now, they had made a covenant. They had to honor that covenant. How many times have you made a covenant? How many times have you made a deal with somebody? And later on you go, oh, I should not have done that. And the consequences are now something I can't reverse. How many times has somebody married somebody and they later on go, oh. But I made a covenant. I didn't get married till I was 32. But I remember dreaming about other girls that I had dated. And I'd wake up in a sweat going, oh, it's not real. Oh. That's never happened with my wife. No, I'm serious. I remember waking up going, oh, thank the Lord. I didn't do that. I've told you this, illustration. I've told you how when I was 4 years old, I had a little girlfriend. You remember this? Anybody remember my girlfriend? Do you remember her name? It was Robin. Robin, my girlfriend. On Franklin Street in Omaha, Nebraska. And we moved away from Franklin Street and moved to 30th Street. And I would get on the phone and call my girlfriend Robin. And I remember talking to her on the phone. I was 6 years old. I remember, I can take you in the house where I was sitting on the steps. And we were talking about getting married. I was 6 years old. And I told Robin, you're a Lutheran, I'm a Baptist, I can't marry you. Folks, kids hear things in church you don't think they do. And I had heard that from my pastor at one time. I said, I can't marry you. Even then, I knew the consequences of a foolish association. A teen falls in love, they say, with an unsaved or a backslidden person, and they say, well, I'm going to change him. I'm going to change her. No, you're going to start serving his or her God is what you're going to start doing. And here's what's going to happen, and this is what happens to these children of Israel. Number one, you will dwell together. This is one of the negative consequences. You will dwell together. We saw that in verses 16 to 20. You will find out too late that affiliation is not a help, it is a hindrance. Now, these people you are supposed to get rid of dwell with you. God had warned in Exodus 23:33, they shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. For if thou serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee. Numbers 33:55, but if you will not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then it shall come to pass that those which ye let remain of them shall be pricks in your eyes and thorns in your sides and shall vex you in the land wherein ye dwell. Folks, you cannot affiliate with the enemy without eventually smelling like the enemy. You cannot work all day pitching manure out of a barn without smelling like it when you come home. I did that as a kid. My brother Calvin and I, we would spend an entire day pitching manure out of the barn. And it was ripe. And our sinuses were clear. And we would come home and my mom would say, "Whoo!" We would say, "What?" Why? We had been in it all day. We didn't notice. And the longer you dwell with somebody, the more you become like them. And this is the danger of foolish associations. The more you begin to smell like them, and pretty soon, it's not offensive anymore. You will dwell together. Number two, it'll defile your walk with God. Going back to Exodus 23. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell with thy in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. For if thou serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto thee. It'll defile your walk with God. You cannot be affiliated, I say again, with God and his enemies at the same time. A covenant with God precludes any covenant with his enemies. We don't have time, but you can look it up in Judges 2, 1 and 2, where they made a covenant with the enemies. Number three, it'll destroy your family. Here's the consequence of a foolish affiliation. It'll destroy your family. I read from Deuteronomy 7, verses 2 to 4. Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor show mercy unto them. Neither shalt thou make marriages with them. Thy daughter thou shalt not give unto his son, nor his daughter shalt thou take unto thy son, for they will turn away thy son from following me, that they may serve other gods. It'll destroy your physical family. This is the cause of strife at home if the other person seeks to please God and one doesn't. You've got strife. You've got fighting. Folks, it'll destroy your spiritual family. This is the cause of strife at church. If some people are trying to please God and others aren't, there's conflict. So the friendship has to be destroyed before the friendship destroys everything that's dear to you. But there are some things that, you know what, you made a covenant. You can't. It's irreversible. And this was irreversible. Fourthly, here's what will happen. You will soon find yourself defending the enemy you were supposed to destroy. And that's what you find in Joshua chapter 10. The Gibeonites come to Joshua and say, "Help us." They're coming out to fight us because they found out we made a covenant with you. And you find in chapter 10, Israel defending the very people they were supposed to destroy. You said that the enemy would serve you. You go back to verse 8. And the people said, "We are thy servants." Verse 21, the idea again is given. Well, we'll do what you tell us to do. We will be drawers of wood and hewers of water for you. We will do what you... We will be your servants. And you go, "Well, that's a nice arrangement." But pretty soon, the people you are serving, you soon start serving them. As they do in chapter 10. A strong believer marries a weak believer. And you know what you soon find out that strong believer doing? Defending the weak believer spouse and their position. Here's something I've noticed. I've noticed that you've got parents who one day took a strong stand. Their kids grow up and their kids start getting involved in some things. And the parents start defending what their kids are involved in. And soon the parents take the same position their kids were taking. I've seen this happen more and more. I've got friends who, they strong stand. Their kids grew up, started affiliating with the wrong kind of people, started running with the wrong crowd. We're not talking about unsaved people, but saved people, disobedient brethren. And pretty soon the parents are now defending what the kids are doing and taking the same stand the kids are taking. You'll soon begin defending your enemy. Well, verse 20. This we will do to them. We will even let them live, lest wrath be upon us because of the oath which we swear unto them. The Gibeonites deceived the children of Israel. Nevertheless, they were bound by their oath and they could not break their vow. Oh, if they had only asked God in the first place, they would have never gotten themselves into this predicament. But now they have to live with it. Now they have these thorns in their side, and their gods become a snare unto them. Folks, this message this morning is a warning not to involve yourself in any foolish association in the first place. To recognize that the devil is subtle, I am easily deceived. To recognize the importance of a close walk with God. And to realize the consequences of getting involved in a foolish association. Be not deceived. Be not deceived. Bad associations corrupt reputable character. Would you bow your heads? With every head bowed and every eye closed,